Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey everybody, Max Boltman here alongside Corey Prondman for another episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series. This one, obviously, the big one. Our last one before the 2022 NHL Draft. We are on site in Montreal. Corey, a lot of buzz so far this week, and I want to start the show right at the very top with really kind of conflicting info that's coming out around here about what the Montreal Canadiens are going to do with the first overall pick.
Yeah, I would say going into the draft right now, 55% of my information around the league are saying they're going to take Juraj Slafkovský. 45% are saying they're going to take Shane Wright. It's conflicting information, and I had a good friend of mine who works in the league saying when it's conflicting information, it means nobody really knows, and they're probably talking out of their ass a little bit. And so we'll see what happens come draft day, who they ultimately end up picking. I do think talking to people around the league, though, not about who they think Montreal is going to take, but talking about who they think is the best player, it does feel like things are trending in the way of Slafkovský into a more of a majority opinion, or at least that I would, because Logan Cooley is also in that picture, I would say less than 50% of NHL personnel believe that Shane Wright is the best option. And that's why you're seeing this very legitimate debate going on right now at the top of the draft.
And I think that debate has maybe gotten in some ways written off as, you know, media, you know, stoking the fire and all
right,
that.
Right, that's bullshit though.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think it's good for people to hear that this is the dialogue around league circles too. But the aspect of this conversation that interests me is, okay, Montreal's going to have, you know, they'll reach some decision by draft day tomorrow on who they think is the best player. You would hope. It'd be embarrassing to take a timeout at first overall. But the question to me is, how far does the gap have to be in order for Montreal to pass up the exceptional status, ballyhooed Canadian in their home building at first overall? Is it just, if there's an inch of separation, that's the guy? Does it have to be a significant gap?
It's a good question, and it's something that, you know, a lot of people in the league are talking about. I don't know exactly in that room how that is weighing in. Something that we've all talked about, you know, the hosting thing, the fact, you know, they have the first pick. People are going to be probably walking into the stadium with Shane Wright jerseys, Shane Wright Habs jerseys. Mind you, they might get booed. I've heard all the theories and stuff like that. I still think you got to take the best player, because if you take the best player and 6-12 months from now, you're proven right, nobody cares. Nobody's going to remember what happened on draft day. Never mind if, let's say Shane Wright is not the first pick. If he's not even the second pick, which I think is possible, then people really won't care. These are all hypotheticals. I get the doomsday scenario. I get the doomsday. You pick Slafkovský, you pick Cooley. Shane Wright's in the NHL next year in a Devils or a Coyotes jersey. And he's putting up 60 points and he looks like a star. And the firing gun's at the head of Jeff Gordon and Ken Hughes before they're even halfway through their first season. I understand that scenario that I've heard from many people. I don't know, man. I think you just got to take whoever you think the best player is. I mean, that's your job as hockey people, is to, And I've heard like rumors, and I saw TSN's Darren Drager reported earlier today that they that ownership is getting involved in this decision. I've heard that speculation before too. I just think you got to take the best player, and whatever happens, a little bit like booing, whatever. If it's not, presuming it isn't Shane Wright, which it very well could be, I think you got to live with those. You just got to live with it.
A conversation that we've had a couple times this week so far already is that this. I mean, I know that Craig Custance and Sean Gentile talked about a similar thing on their show recently about kind of the different directions that the draft can take here. And I guess in some ways that's true everywhere. You know, it's path dependency, all that. But it seems to me that if Montreal takes Shane Wright, it could be a very chalk top 5 to 10.
I'd agree with that. I think Slafkovský is the Devil's guy, so they would go after him at 2. And I don't know for sure that Logan Cooley is Arizona's guy, but that's been my information so far. And then I think you would see Simon Nemish go 4th of Seattle, and then Cutter Gauthier go 5. So I think, yes, it would be rather chalk in that instance.
But if Slafkovský goes 1...
things get interesting.
Yes. So you have the Devils trade scenarios. You have the Devils, and I know we'll get to your mock draft in a minute. You've got them with David Juracek in the most recent mock. That strikes me as either of those two could really throw all kinds of different twists in.
Right. I mean, and this is the kind of thing where it's interesting when we talk about the Shane Wright scenario 1, because I think he is, listen, on my list, he's number 2. I have him in a near neck and neck with Slafkovský for several months now, even predating the World Championships. I think he's a great, great player. But and we've had this conversation with league personnel in Montreal here. There are people around the league who are not Wright believers, who if they had whatever, a second, third, fourth overall pick, they wouldn't be excited to select him there. I would not say that's the majority of people I talk to, but there's enough of those people out there where it creates, kind of, I mentioned, a possibility that if he is not the first pick, I can't tell you with confidence where he goes.
And you figure at some point somebody is either going to just say, okay, we're taking him, or just trade exactly. Trade up.
With New Jersey being the one that I think of the most of, if he goes, Slafkovský goes 1 and he's still there 2, you got to imagine there's somebody out there, whether it's organization I can think of like Detroit, like Buffalo, I can think of a couple others that really need a premium young center. They'll be like, yeah, let's go make that move, get New Jersey whatever they want, because they're looking to move that pick anyways.
I'll tell you, I do think that it's still going to go the chalk route.
Right.
But I got to say, I'm kind of pulling for that alternative route, because it'll make for a really interesting night here.
I mean, at this point, I'm done guessing. Like, I'm trying to do the best reporting I can, but it's hard. It's harder to do it in the NHL than it would be like in the MLB draft, where you have to...
Well, slot agreements.
Yeah, exactly. That the rumors get out, who the agents are negotiating with. This is all, you know, it's there's some reporting aspect to it. It's like layers of hearsay almost. So you don't always know how reliable the information is. So I do the best I can, but I'm not going to say with confidence. I know it's going to happen at 1 tomorrow, and you know, we'll see when Montreal's on the clock.
Not to, you know, belabor this into the ground, but you know, Montreal people have in fans. I mean, when I say this, have not maybe responded the most openly to the idea that it could be someone other than Shane Wright.
Right.
If the pick tomorrow is Juraj Slafkovský or even Logan Cooley, but let's say it's Slafkovský for now, what do you think ultimately at the end of the day, what would be your message to Montreal fans? Why should they be still like very excited?
Well, again, I think he's the best player in the draft. And obviously Montreal would do that if they think he's the best player in the draft. And there's a reason, as I said earlier in the show, that a majority of NHL scouts I'm talking to right now think he is the best player in the draft. He has a very unique athletic toolkit. There are not a whole lot of guys who are 6'4", 6'4 and a quarter, whatever he is, can skate the way he does, have the high-end offensive skills that he does, the goal-scoring ability he does. He looks like he should be a star. He didn't produce like one this year, and that's the thing that everyone comes back to very reasonably, but he looks like he's an NHL star, and there were select moments this year where he played like a guy who was going to be an NHL star. And I think he's really the only guy in this class you can say both of those things about. That he looks like he's going to be a star, and there's at least been times this season where he's played like a star. And there's nobody else in this draft class you can say both of those things about.
Well, just to pull you back to, you know, I take people behind, we were just having a conversation at lunch on this very topic before we recorded here, and we talked about the value of, and sometimes the international, I think, gets downplayed in the public sphere because it's small sample, et cetera. But you look at two of Slafkovský's shining moments over the course of the last year, the Olympics and the World Championships. And it's not just that he produced in those events. It's that the quality of competition there is quite high.
Sure.
And I would say even probably higher than Liga.
Especially the World Championships.
Even, right.
People make the stupid point about how he produced against all the bad teams. And it's not stupid. It's valid. But I would bet if you just did it with I bet every single player's points come against the bad teams.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I would actually love to know a prospect who produces more against the top three teams in his league.
In the NHL too. Yeah. That's how it works. People produce the stupidest argument, but anyways, go on.
But I think it was a really good point that you made, that when you see a guy like Slavkovsky produce, not just international competition, but against top international teams, it takes a lot of the guesswork out because they're already playing against NHL players. You want to know what they're going to look like in the NHL? Well, you look at what Slavkovsky did against Team Canada. He's just doing it against the NHL.
He didn't put up many points, but he looked like he belonged. He was playing against NHL players and he looked like, I'm making a difference and I'm 18 years old. And yes, now you're like, okay, well, now I can plant you. I can watch you do this, and I can envision planting you in an NHL lineup tomorrow, and you're doing the same thing. You won't be high in an NHL lineup right away. I presume you'll be like a second or a third liner, kind of, you know, how a lot of, most of the non-high-end guys have been in the league right away. But I think he can, you look at that, you think he's going to be in the NHL right away, and he can help our team right away. And you're hoping as he matures, he becomes a great player with time.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, let's move into the mock draft now. A lot of good info. And I would encourage people, if you haven't read this yet, go check it out, not just to see who your favorite team has slotted where, but you drop great little tidbits into the blurbs. And one of the ones that jumped right off the page to me came at number two, where you put in the tidbit about New Jersey and the possible consideration of Marco Kasper as high as two. That strikes me as a big one. And I don't know that we're going to call it, we're not going to call it likely, but it's an interesting tidbit that I think is revealing of something that we, you know, have continued to have conversations about this week here in Montreal, which is that, you know, Marco Kasper is a player who's going to get real attention in that top 10.
Oh, I mean, I think he's a lock to go in the top 10 from everything I'm hearing. And yeah, I mean, we talked to some NHL personnel the other day who say that, you know, said he has a chance to be a top 5 guy. And we'll see what ultimately happens on draft day. But I mean, there are big fans of this player. Look what he did at those World Championships in the SHL playoffs, playing a regular shift all season for a top SHL team in Rogla. This is a legitimate prospect and a guy who... whose stock has just kept going up and up as the season has gone along. And I'm not sure he's going to go at two. I've heard rumors about him in New Jersey going back to before they won their lottery. And I always kind of figured that he was kind of out of the mix since they got the second pick. And I don't expect he's likely going to be their pick if they keep it, but he's a guy I've had several people around the league tell me to don't be surprised if this happens. And that's why I kind of put it in the blurb there.
But you do have Juracek as obviously the pick there. So that's still maybe more the expectation. And then obviously the trade scenarios. At number five, Philly strikes me as another kind of pivot point. And we talk about kind of the established top six. You've got him with Cutter Gauthier. How confident would you say you are that Gauthier is off the board at number five or later?
I would say I'd be kind of surprised if he's still there after five. There's a lot of big Cutter Gauthier fans right now in the league. Talking to people in Montreal this week, I knew the Cutter buzz was real, but it's really real. I'm not even 100% sure he's there by Philly's pick. But I think if he is there at Philly's pick, I think from everything I'm hearing, that's their guy.
Nathan Gauthier, another kind of riser, and I think you have him at 13 in this one.
Yes.
And it sounds like there is some love for him in that range, 10 to 15. Like, it may not just be at 13.
Right. I don't have it as rock solid as maybe when you get to that point in the draft, the teens. I just know that there is significant interest in this player from people around the league. I don't know whether it'll be 13 or 14 or 15 or 18 or something along those lines. But I do know around the league, there's a lot of interest in this player. Big two-way center. The people who there's divisions on him. The scouts who aren't as big on him just don't buy the offense. And the scouts who think there is enough offense there are going to bat for him pretty significantly right now.
What about Noah Oslin, who's a guy who really since the World U18 tournament has been a riser in this mock? You've got him at 15. I think you had him. Did you have him in the same spot in the previous mock like a week or two ago?
I did. Same thing with Gauthier.
But he's another guy who it just seems like is going to be, you know, if you're not caught up on the Noah Oslin hype, you should do it in the next 24 hours because it's getting there.
Yeah, he's a first round lock at this stage. I would even say not a lock, but a strong chance to be a top 20 pick in the draft. And yeah, to your point, it's really been a rapid rise for him. I think even the teams that are big fans of him will admit they didn't have him in the high spots they had him in before the U18 World Championships. A lot of minds were slowly changing. He had a really strong second half there in the J20s in Sweden, then they're being the junior league they play in. But it was really after the U18 World Championships where he had the 10 points and he was a big-time player playing huge minutes on that team that won the gold medal there for Sweden against the United States that his stock really started to rise. And I'm starting to hear the term, okay, this guy's, you know, could be a top half of the first round candidate. And that's my projection at the moment.
Reed Schaefer, another one of those risers through this process, obviously on the back of a really strong WHL playoff run. We had a great conversation about him last night and what can he be. And I liked what you said. You know, how similar is this to a Matthew Knies a year ago?
Right, not the current version.
Correct.
But I looked at Knies and like the criticism was the skating, the production. And I'm not sure like this is the most naturally offensive gifted player in the world. But he had size. He had competitiveness, and you still thought there is some offense here. And that's kind of where I think I am with Schaefer is I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's the fastest player in the world. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's the most skilled or the smartest hockey player in the world. But I think there's enough skill there. You can shoot the puck really well. He's highly competitive and physical. He's, you know, he's even bigger than Knies. I think he's around 6'3 or so. Great net front presence. And I just think those combination of qualities make me think he is going to go in the first round and could go higher than people expect.
No matter what shakes out tomorrow night, one of the big stories coming out of the Bell Center is going to be what happened with the top Russian prospects.
Absolutely.
And what are you hearing? What's the latest on that? I know I asked Steve Yzerman yesterday about this. He said they're organizing their list the same way. I'd be curious if that means they're willing to still make the pick in the order it is on their list.
Well, you're the Yzerman expert. He doesn't know. He kind of talks in code sometimes,
yes,
right?
Right. And so he said they're organizing their list in the same way. He also, in the same press conference, did acknowledge the uncertainty that this year. And obviously, how could you not? But I'm curious, like, you know, it's one thing to put your list and say, we're still ranking them the same way. It's another when you're on the clock to go up there and make a pick with the way things are right now.
Right. And the news with who was going to be the projected backup goalie in Philadelphia, Ivan Fedotov, arrested in Russia over the last week, made its way around NHL circles very quickly, and it's been a big talking point among NHL people I've been talking to over the last couple of days. It's a legitimate concern. I feel like, based on my conversations, it feels like with Pavel Minyakov, who played in Saginaw this season, and did not go back to Russia during the offseason, it feels like teams are not as approaching him with the same degree of caution. It seems like this guy is committed to being in North America. He doesn't want to go back to Russia. We don't feel like there's these various risks as much as the other players. There are some teams that are still giving him the same level of scrutiny as the other Russian prospects, but I feel like his stock is not going to be as affected as Danila Yurov and Ivan Morozhnichenko. As we get closer to draft day, I moved them both down on my mock quite a few spots from my previous one, and I'm just sensing a lot of cold feet right now among those top Russian prospects. You know, if Morozhnichenko gets out of the first round, I'm not going to blink. Even if Danila Yurov gets out of the first round, I'll be a little surprised, but I wouldn't be overly surprised. I think there's understandable apprehension right now when it comes to those two for different reasons, but still, but similar reasons in some respect too.
I still look at Buffalo, Arizona, maybe to a degree, Montreal, these teams that have so many picks in that range that can afford. I know you always want to get the best player, but the talent level that we're talking about here, especially with Yurov and Merezhchenko, like by the time you're in the late 20s there, I have to think one of those teams, if you miss the pick completely and you never get the player, so be it. But it's such a swing. I have to think one of those three teams at least takes the swing.
If I was in that position, I agree with you. And that's probably what I would lean to doing is, especially with Yurov, at some point you do it. I would probably around 20 for me, if I'm being realistic. The next best player will just not even be close to him in terms of ability. So I would take the swing. It's easier for me to say when I'm not the one who gets fired if he doesn't come over. But that would be the way I was leaning. The devil's advocate argument I've heard to that, it's a very common argument that I've heard about whatever it is, Montreal, Seattle, Buffalo, Arizona. And I had one person from one of those organizations tell me, yes, we have a lot of picks, but we have a lot of picks because our team isn't good. And we had to trade a lot of players and we need to fill those roster spots at some point. So when you get a high pick, you want to make sure you're actually getting an NHL player at some point. And that might seem like a safe argument that doesn't appeal to fans, but that's definitely something that these teams think about.
It's a legitimate argument, and I certainly get that it's way easier to speak from this seat right here at the hotel and say these things. But I do think you can fill the roster spot. Like it's not to say that you can't find really good players in the 20s, but one of those players would be Danila Yurov, and he is closer to the type of player you can't just go out and get than a lot of other guys that are going to be available from 20 to on.
I agree, and I would do it. And here's again the argument I hear back is that when you're picking in the 20s, usually the way NHL draft boards work is you're going to have one or two players in your top 12, your top 13 that are probably still going to be available. And then you're going to be nearly, even though the statistics show what you're saying, that when you get to the 20s, the failure rate increases substantially, the chance of you getting an impact player decreases substantially, but in the minds of those NHL teams, they still think they're getting a top 12 player in the draft in the 20s or a top 13 player or whatever. So their argument would be, well, we can get our 12th rated prospect or we can get our 8th and has a KHL deal. And I think a lot of those teams are going to lean to the former route in that scenario.
Would you include Minnesota in that group? They don't have three, but they just picked up a second first round pick at 19 and 24. Do they belong in that group of multi-pick teams?
I think so. Cause I think they have two second rounds too, because of the Philip Johansson comp pick. So they've got four picks in the top two rounds.
All right. So let me go through and let me just read you a few players. You can role play as GM of any of those teams I just mentioned, or you could tell me which ones you would make the pick as. You're at 21. No, sorry. That's Pittsburgh. You're at 19, Minnesota. Are you taking Yurov? Are you taking Nazar? Are you taking Denton Matejchuk, Rucker McGroarty, Liam Ogren? Where'd you go there?
I think at 19, you're probably, again, just my personal list, you're probably still hoping somebody nearly as good is there. You're probably twisting your arm a little bit at that point, but you're really hoping somebody nearly as good is there. I would say at 19, it seems unlikely. I think when you start getting to like the mid to late 20s, whereas, you know, it's Montreal's second pick, it's Buffalo's third pick, it's Arizona's second pick. That's when, if I was a GM, that's when I would start thinking about that one more seriously. But I think at 19, you're still hoping for a top four defenseman, a legitimate top six forward, maybe even a top six center at that point. You know, that's still really high in the draft.
Who goes first, Yurov or Brad Lambert, who you've got, I think, at 28 to the Sabres in the most recent mock?
That's like 50-50, right? Because I think everyone, I think most people would agree Yurov's the better player. But both acknowledge, I think anyone acknowledge that they both have risks, different kinds of risks. You know, Lambert seems to find a new team every 6 months, and Yurov obviously has, you know, him being signed to a KHL contract. If I was in that position, I would probably take Lambert first. But that being said, you know, I have I have Yurov higher on my list, and I incorporated the Russian variable into that, but I didn't incorporate this newest information into it, and maybe it's a bit of a recency bias, but this Fedotov thing is scary, man. Like, it's, and that's kind of the issue with the Russian situation is Russian players are being signed to NHL deals right now. Now, obviously, the most prolific of them being Kuzmenko, came over from the KHL. Right now, for the most part, the visa situation is not an issue. Right now, for the most part, you can get these guys signed. That's what just happened with Fedotov is kind of the crux of the issue is there's unpredictability. There's chaos going on in that part of the world right now. Right now, things are fine, but you draft Yurov and 2 years from now, it may not be fine all of a sudden. So in that, again, to answer your question, I think I would lean Lambert.
It is interesting. I mean, we didn't know the Fedotov thing. I don't know if people had that on their radar as a possibility 2 weeks ago.
But that's what I mean. It's like, there's, who knows what could happen? Yeah. You know, there's a war going on. There's all kinds of international relations issues going on right now. These are things that neither you or I have any degree of expertise to talk about. And neither do these NHL teams, mind you. So I understand why, if you're an NHL manager, you're just like, fuck it, take the next guy. You know, why are we voluntarily signing up for this headache?
I want to steer us to the mailbag in a minute. Any closing thoughts on the mock draft that I didn't bring up or anything you've heard? I know this published, 8 hours ago now. I've seen you on the phone plenty. Any extra things you want to add in before we move on to the mailbag?
It's nothing that substantial. We're just circling back to the number one for a second. I published what I think is the most likely scenario, but it's definitely not one that I'm confident about. And I say this, I probably can see some fans thinking that I'm like in the anti-Shane Wright crowd, which I am 100% not. I think Shane Wright is an excellent player. And whether it's Shane Wright or Juraj Slafkovský on Thursday night, I think Habs fans should be ecstatic about either player, because I think both of them are guys I project become core foundational players in the NHL for a very long time.
I would absolutely second that. And that goes back to something we talked about last night, too. If you get Shane Wright, and I realize there may be some less sizzle today than there would have been when we had him on the podcast in training camp, for example, I think you're still getting a top six center who's going to be a big part of your team for a long time. And I think maybe he doesn't have... No, I don't think the upside has dramatically changed. I think the certainty has dropped from what it was. But I don't think the upside is gone. You could still have like a 30-plus goal-scoring, detailed two-way center, which to me sounds like a number one.
I think he has the potential to still be a star in the National Hockey League. I don't think that reality is gone. I'm not as confident about it as I was 12 months ago, but I think that reality is still there, just like how I think with Slafkovský, despite his middling production in TPS, I think he has potential to be a star too. I don't subscribe to the theory that it's a below-average draft class, but below average draft classes produce NHL stars. And sometimes they come, people would always point to 2017. Oh, it's going to be Makar or Pedersen. It's going to be 4 or 5. But 2014 was a below average draft. And Aaron Ekblad is a monster. Yep. You would love to have Aaron.
He was on my Norris ballot this year.
He's an absolute monster. Below average first overall pick, I would argue.
Yep.
Not the sexiest number one. Any NHL team would love to have Aaron Ekblad right now. And it's possible this could be the next Aaron Ekblad.
And I think to your point about 2017, even... The Nico, you obviously know Makar, Pedersen, Heiskanen. They went 3-4-5. Yes, they would go in some order 1-2-3 in a redraft. Nico Hischier is a great player to have in the New Jersey Devils organization.
2011 was a below average draft, and if you redo that draft, Kucherov's gonna go high. You have Dougie Hamilton, you have Mark Scheifele in there who are gonna go higher than that they have picked. But the number two pick in that draft wasn't the sexiest player, but he just raised the Stanley Cup over his head a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely. All right, let's go into the mailbag now. This first one is from Ernie Morris. He says, there seems to be a somewhat consensus top six. Which player could break up the party and bust into the top six that we're not talking about in that group?
We talked about Marco Kasper.
Yep.
That's the one I've heard the most often mentioned. If I had to pick number two, it would be Jonathan Lekkerimäki. I think there's a minority opinion out there among NHL teams that this guy has game-breaking skill. I personally haven't witnessed that when I've watched him, but there are some people out there that feel like this guy's going to be an elite goal scorer. He has elite skill, a future first line, power play one, highlight reel type of player. And so those are the two that I would mention.
when we talk about those guys, are we talking about at six in your mind, or are we talking about them at five, at three, at two, et cetera?
The scenario where I'm not 100% sure is I've done mock drafts where we got in Gauthier to six. I've done mock drafts where we got in Simon Nemec to six. If Yiricek is there at six, like let's say it's the chalk scenario where Wright, Slavkovsky, Cooley, Nemec go 1 to 4, and then Gauthier goes 5. I'm not 100% sure Columbus is taking Yiricek at six.
Interesting.
So that's the one where I think there could be some. I think it would still be the most likely scenario just because the pressing need for young defense in that organization. You know, I've seen the trade rumors on online about them being linked to Chychrun. I don't know whether that would affect anything or not, but that's the one I just, based on my information, I haven't gotten that one rock solid. I've gotten the Nemec one rock solid. I've gotten the Gauthier one rock solid. I haven't gotten the Yiricek one rock solid. So that's a possibility. And I think New Jersey at two or whoever they, you know, is kind of a bit of a wild card here. I can't tell you with certainty what they're going to do. I'm still a little uncertain on Seattle too, to be quite honest. Like I still think it'll be something like, it'll be either Nemec or Cooley or something along those lines, but I can't sit here and tell you that I have that team down rock solid either.
David says, do you think NHL scouts give extra points to centermen? Similar to the conversation we've had on the show before about, you know, the best player, the most valuable player, the distinctions there. Centers are hard to come by. Do you think NHL scouts give extra points to centers?
Yeah, I think they do. I think when you're grading the, they won't. How do I put this? I don't think they're boosting a guy up in their overall ratings on their tool scale because he's a center. But the way I think most team operates, to my understanding, is they'll all have a checklist or a scale for tools that they use, and they grade guys out, and they and kind of spits out a projection at the end or something similar to that. And that's a kind of a rough overview. All 32 teams will do things differently. But I've always been understanding if it's close, you take the center or the defenseman. It's how teams tend to operate.
And we've talked in the past, like sometimes like a third line center and a second line wing can be of comparable value.
Exactly. Right. And I think that kind of comes up in this conversation has come up numerous times in the context of the first overall pick, where I've said, I think it's close. And they're like, well, why don't you put Wright at one? And I said, it's close because he's a center. If he wasn't, I think Slavkovsky would have a pretty firm grip on this. And sometimes the winger is just better. It's just a better player. I don't think that's the case in this scenario. But again, we mentioned 2011. Leonard Cox, better player than Nugent Hopkins. Would you take Taylor Hall or Tyler Seguin? Over the course of their career, I'd probably lean Hall. Got one an MVP and more productive career, even though there's been significant ups and downs. Yep.
For both.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's other examples we can go to as well. You know, 2018, clearly the best forward in that draft was a winger.
We had a good conversation about Lafreniere and Stützle and just a couple years old in the draft today.
Right. I would still lean Lafreniere. I understand the argument for Stützle still, but it's definitely a lot closer than it was on draft day. But, you know, that happened with Lafreniere and Byfield. There were scouts I talked to who said, I want the center. I'm picking Byfield. And the Rangers concluded, no, we think Lafreniere is the better player. And at least so far, I would argue they're right. Byfield has not done anything to disprove that by any means. So I get that. Sometimes in, you know, Dylan Strome versus Mitch Marner, another example. But there's many times where the center is the most valuable player and it's the harder player to trade for, arguably. So I understand that sentiment for sure.
Should we read anything into the fact that Jeff Gordon's been at the very top of the draft in the past? He went with the winger both times, Lafreniere and Kako.
I have no idea what to read. I'm
all right. No more Montreal. No, it's fine.
Like Ken Hughes did a press conference like a couple of days ago. He was like being asked a bunch of questions and the amount of tea leaves people were reading into that press conference was hilarious. I was seeing the public discussion about it. I was bored. I was amusing myself. I was like, oh, he said he wants upside. That means that guy. Oh, he wants character. That means he wants that guy. It was ridiculous.
They're not dropping breadcrumbs for us to figure it out. They're just trying to get through the presser without tipping their hand. Vaughn Strick says, if Bedard, Michkov, and Fantilli were draft eligible on Thursday, where do you think they'd go in the draft? I know you don't always love looking ahead a year here, but I think this is interesting, yeah, especially when it comes to Michkov.
And I've done enough homework on those guys to where I feel comfortable at least roughly asking that question. Bedard's number one. It's not even a conversation. He's number one with a bullet. Michkov is complicated because on pure ability, he's two in that group. But man, you've got now this. We're gonna be talking about Michkov just so much over the next 12 months for this issue. Signed through the 2026 KHL season. Plays in Russia. With the situation going on in Russia and the fact that he plays for such a powerful organization at SKA. I think he's the second best player. And I think I would still have him too because the drop-off between him to the next best guy is so large, in my opinion. Take a lot of guts to make that pick, though. If you had the second overall, even next year, if you have the second overall pick, take that guy. It's going to take less, unless something really changes in the world in a short period of time. It's going to take a lot of guts to make that pick.
Well, and he's an 04 birth year, right?
Yeah, late 04.
So teams were very nearly going to have to be making the choice of whether to take him number one this year.
Yeah. If he was born a few weeks earlier, that would be fun. But we avoided that hypothetical scenario.
Kick it down the road.
To answer the end of the question, then it would be Slavkovsky 3, and it'd be close between Wright and Fantilli 4-5 for me. I'm guessing I would lean towards Wright, but it would be really close between Wright and Fantilli.
All right. Who are you targeting at 14-30 if you're the Jets? I don't know. We've given Winnipeg a whole lot of airtime on this draft cycle. They're a team with two picks, 14-30. Who are you targeting there for them?
It feels like at 14, they're going to take a center. It just feels like there's going to be, you look at that, look at their depth chart. They have good forward prospects in Cole Perfetti, Chaz Lucius, but there's not a whole lot of true centers in the organization. Perfetti's probably an NHL winger. Lucius is probably an NHL winger. So I think you're looking at Connor Geeky. You're looking at Noah Oslin. You're looking at Nathan Gauthier. I might be skimming over. Maybe Frank Nazar. I think those are the options you're looking at for Winnipeg there.
Dane asks, who do you think will go first or has the best chance of falling? I guess we can do both of those. Savoy or Kamel? Now you had Kamel falling out of the top 10 today. And on Sam's mock, he had Savoy falling out of the top 10.
Who do you think is more likely to fall out of the top 10, Savoy or Kamel?
Right. I think when we talked about this issue before, we discussed the three small wingers in the draft high in the draft: Jonathan Lekromäki, Matthew Savoy, and Joachim Kamel. And I always kind of figured one of those guys are not going to go in the top 10, just based on reality and what teams tend to covet in the draft. As we've gotten closer to the draft, I don't get the sense Lekromäki is going to be one of those guys. We just talked about him as a potential sleeper for the top 5 or 6. Seems to be the guy that has more fans in the National Hockey League right now than Kamel or Savoy. On my last mock, I had Savoy at 11 and Kamel at 7. And I just think history shows teams get scared by size. And Savoy is a hell of a hockey player. But he is 5'9". He is quite physically mature already for his age. You know, I can see teams talking themselves out of him.
Matt Rosen says, are there any mitigating factors around Slavkovsky's Liga performance? I get he has a great toolkit, but he produced like a second rounder there this year. The big one that stands out to me is ice time. He was playing on a team that was not easy to get minutes on, but I think this is a fair question as we discuss the context of his season.
Yeah, listen, you can have all the caveats you want, because the reader's asking, you know, TPS was a top team. They went to the finals in Liga, so those kind of teams are not easy to get significant ice time on, like Sebastian Aho, for example, in his draft year with Karpat didn't get major minutes, for example. So that happens. But when you're talking about a first overall pick, Sebastian Aho was a second round pick. You're talking about a first overall pick. You don't want to hear those excuses. You want to see production. You want to see scoring. You want to see highlight reels. This is not a 15th overall pick we're talking about here. So it's, again, you can make those caveats, the ice time. I've heard the defensive style arguments. And again, he played on a great team. It sounds more like excuses to me. I think with both Slavkovsky and Wright, because this discussion has been so close, both are so imperfect players, I feel like a lot of excuses get made for both of these players. I think it's accept the reality. Slavkovsky is what he is. He's a physical freak. He had a shitty season in Liga, and he had incredible international performances between the senior team and the U18 team at the Hlinka. Shane Wright is an excellent all-around player. He had a great season, well below the standards that you expect of a first overall pick in the CHL. And he has an incredible prior track record. Those are the facts. Whichever one you prefer, you take. But I hate the excuses that get made for both of these players.
Interesting one from JP Claremont, who wants to know about your top three. He kind of notes that even though you have Wright and Slavkovsky a tier above, Cooley's the one who has above average grades on every tool. Why is that the case?
I think he's the most talented player in the draft. The concerns there are twofold on him. It's the size, and I know people get their backs up when people say this, but you're picking high in the draft. 5'10 guys better be extremely dynamic if you're taking someone who's 5'10, and he is extremely dynamic. So then the question is, what's the second issue? He didn't produce like someone who's extremely dynamic. You look at the NTDP historical rates, whether it's his entire NTDP season or just his USHL numbers, they're pretty good, but they're nothing special. There's, you look through the history of the NTDP, there's a bunch of guys
at
the similar scoring rates. So typically when you're drafting small guys high in the draft, they have to be, you know, usually
smarter,
extremely high scores, guys who rip up their junior leagues. Because you figure that when they go to higher levels, there's going to be some transition issues. They're probably not going to score at the same rate, but if they're dynamic and they score a lot at the lower levels, they'll probably still score in the NHL. But this guy, I think he's better than Clayton Keller, but that's kind of been always the guy that people can keep coming back to when that aren't big on Cooley. I know some scouts who wouldn't take him in the top three, for example. That argument comes back is, I just think he's going to be another Clayton Keller. He'll be a 50, 60 point forward. I'm not 100% convinced he's going to actually be able to stick at center. Not a whole lot of centers in the NHL look like him. So I think that's where the hesitancy come in. But there's no doubt he is the most talented, dynamic player in this draft. He was the most fun player to watch in this draft on a given night. There is no question in my mind about that fact. But there are, just like with Wright and with Slavkovsky, there are serious risk elements on his profile too.
Last one here is from Aaron Bard, who wants to know about Rucker McGroarty. He says he's seen him anywhere from the mid-teens to the early second round in mocks and player rankings. Why is he polarizing and where do you see him going? Obviously, in your mock, I think he was a 24, 25 today.
Yeah, I think those divided opinions exist in NHL circles, I believe, too. And you've watched him a ton. You know, it comes down to those feet, essentially. Everything else about his game is great. You know, he's got great skill, hockey sense. He can shoot it. He's extremely competitive. Plays his heart out every night. Just a really awkward skater. I think it's gotten better from where it was a year ago, but it's still an issue. And when I talk to teams that are not in on him, they don't buy the feet. They just think this is another Tyson Forster, Bobby Brink type of prospect who some still believe in both of those guys, mind you, but they just think his skating is just so bad that it's not going to work. But the people who are big fans say, listen, Jason Robertson couldn't skate a lick either. And you know, he had the great brain and the competitiveness and the skill and the scoring ability. And he turned out really well. And I think that's why there's kind of this gap on McGroarty at the moment.
All right, that's going to do it for us today from Montreal. Enjoy the draft, everybody, tomorrow night. You can subscribe to The Athletic for $1 a month right now and get access to all of our great draft coverage from around the league, every team. And, of course, Corey's going to have his complete analysis along with Scott Wheeler on each team's drafts. Enjoy the show, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.